the first question, I'll ask the first question is, what was the inspiration for staging this in Fort Smith?
Well, you know, I do a program every year, and I like to vary the topics in those lecture recitals that I give or productions that I put on. Last year, for example, I played the last piano sonata of Beethoven. But I did it to raise funds for student travel to go to foreign countries, and we did raise quite a bit of money, and we have passed it out to students that are going with me to Paris, France, for example, this next June. And so this year I said, well, I think we need to do something different, completely different. And I happen to have known John Cage, and I put on a production of this piece about 10 years ago here. It was called Harpsichord Millennium, and it was successful at that time. I was really surprised. The people were really involved in this production, this multimedia spectacular, something that would catch people's attention and that would have a very large attendance, so that we would have very large attendance at the event.
So is this like the exact imitation of John Cage's piece, or have you twisted it a little?
Yes, I have. And that's one of the challenges, because trying to reach Cage's standard in a new way, you know, is very difficult. For example, just the visuals alone, when John did this piece originally back in 1969, he actually made hand-painted slides that were shown in dozens upon dozens of slide projectors around the audience at that time. In those days, they had this aquarium paint that you would paint on the back of aquariums, and when it dried, it would crystallize and form this pattern. But if you put a drop of glycerin in that aquarium paint, it would mute the colors, and they would dry in an irregular pattern. And if you put them inside glass slides and let them dry, you could use those, and they had what they called psychedelic color schemes, you know. And you could flash those on the wall. And, of course, he did thousands upon thousands of those slides for that concert. But imagery has changed from that time. You know, I'm including things from NASA and the Hubble telescope, and also some of those original slides with John Cage's hand-painted images in there, et cetera. But I tried to reach his standard, because he said, since the music itself was rather microscopic in its detail, he wanted to have the slides be telescopic. In addition, I did something that I think John would like. I decided that since we can't have this production in the round, he prefers this to be in the round. And I do have the sound system in the round. But we have a stage with approximately 425 seats. I decided we need to put something on the stage, but it has to be done using the numbering system that John Cage used. So I've decided to do what I did the last time, and that is invite dance troupes, martial arts organizations, mime actors to come out according to the I Ching numbering system. And it appears at first random, but it's not actually random. This is a very carefully organized system used to for every single note, every single picture you see, every entrance of every performer, etc. And these people are going to be coming out on the stage according to that numbering system. Now, that's unique, because in the original production, Cage just simply had seven harpsichords in the circular amphitheater. It was the assembly hall at the University of Illinois in Champaign. They were celebrating their 100th anniversary, and this was their avant-garde contribution to that celebration. And he had seven harpsichords there, and thousands of students and visitors from around the country, and you were free to walk anywhere you want, in and around the harpsichords. You could talk to the harpsichordists, et cetera. And it's a little more difficult for us to stage it that way in Breedlove Auditorium. So I decided I need to get the audience involved, and I am sectioning off one part for a group of stunt card holders who are going to be holding up signs of the I Ching. And then I'm also asking the audience to come up onto the stage and participate if they want. They can walk around and talk to me. I'll be playing a harpsichord, or Terry Bailey, she'll be playing a harpsichord. Talk to the dancers, talk to the martial arts people as they're making their entrances and exits. And we'll be carefully monitoring the number of people on the stage. But we're going to try to make it as interactive as possible and involve everyone in the performance.
You know, we've been talking for a few minutes here, and we still haven't even talked about all the different elements. If someone comes and, say, it's 7 minutes after the performance has started, what will they be seeing? What will they be hearing?
Well, 7 minutes after the performance, since everything is timed carefully, I'll be giving a lecture. The performance is actually in three parts. The first part is called Four 33, or most people call that 4 minutes and 33 seconds. Dale Herreen, one of our music students, is going to be performing that piece on stage in front of a Steinway Concert grand piano. Now, ordinarily, that piece involves a performer coming out, opening up the lid of the piano, sitting down, opening the lid of the keyboard, and then waiting for 4 minutes and 33 seconds, and then closing the lid of the keyboard, standing up and bowing, and leaving. Some people call that piece silence. Now, usually after about 2 minutes, you'll hear poo-bahs and guffaws and laughter and somebody coughing, or maybe a child in the background is crying or something like that. You might even hear the sounds of the heating, ventilation, air conditioning system above you. Or maybe you'll hear a truck drive by the outside of the auditorium. Those sounds are the piece.
So the piece is never the same.
No, it's never the same. And Cage proved with this piece, 4 minutes and 33 seconds, that there is no such thing as silence. He went into an anechoic chamber one time to see what, you know, if he could hear absolute silence, and he could hear the sound of the blood pulsing through his body. There is no such thing as silence. And he wanted to get away from the idea of do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, and just using the notes on these conventional instruments. He wanted to use all of these sounds in our environment. I was having breakfast with John one time, and I said, why did you pick out 4:33? I mean, why not 5 minutes and 12 seconds or something? He said, well, you could make it 4 feet and 33 inches if you want. Well, I was almost floored when he said that, because it dawned on me that he incorporated both a time-space relationship into his thought process, and that it would be possible to produce 4:33 not simply as a person sitting at a piano, but as an actual space. So that's what I did. And I think we're doing it for the first time. I've never heard of anybody doing this before. It must be a premiere performance of 4:33 as 4 feet and 33 inches. So Dale Herreen will perform the piece in the front of the piano, but I have suspended a very large cube of the dimensions 4 feet and 33 inches above his head. And I don't know what reaction the audience is going to have to that, whether it will have any impact at all, but it's, for me, symbolic. Because this piece could be done in a number of different ways. It could be done as a spatial performance, or it could be done as a time performance.
And that's
the first piece.
That's the first piece, right.
Yes, and that needs explanation, as you can tell. And the next piece, which is the main piece on the program, for about 15 or 20 minutes. So there is some explanation necessary for both of these pieces. I want to whet the audience's appetite a bit. Let them know, who is John Cage? What are his pieces like? And what are some of the issues that come up about them? After the lecture, we're going to start the piece, which is the multimedia piece called HipSkid, and that's the computer abbreviation for harpsichord. And I added 3D at the end because I thought, in addition to everything else that we're adding, dancers and martial artists, why, I want to be, I want to get involved in the latest fad. Let's put it in 3D. So for the first few hundred people that come in, we're giving them 3D glasses. And most of the images that we have, we've been working on them for quite some time, turning them into anaglyphs. You know, those are 3D images that are made out of red and cyan color glasses.
Right.
So that you can watch the whole production for 40 minutes in 3D if you want. And then we have two people from the computer graphics area who have agreed to help out, Heath Cady and Grav Weldon. Grav is making some amorphous-looking shapes that are in three dimensions that will accompany the entire performance of harpsichord. The original performance was 4 hours long, and this one is just 40 minutes.
Have you even practiced this once?
Well, we put out a production 10 years ago here.
And you will do it directly in front of everybody on January 30th?
Yes. Now, remember, there are two composers for this piece, John Cage and LeJaron Hiller. LeJaron Hiller was on permanent appointment at the University of Illinois, and he decided to call in John to create this anniversary piece, this 100th anniversary piece called Harpsichord. Now, whereas Cage was interested in Asian philosophy and I Ching as a numbering system, LeJaron Hiller was interested. He was one of the first people to do any computer music of any kind on the Iliac computer in the 50s at the University of Illinois. He was interested in the Mozart musical dice game, where you shake dice and you come up with different solutions, and those solutions are spelled out in a graph of measures. And this is attributed to Mozart. No one's certain that it was really his game, but that was very popular during his lifetime. You shake dice, And every time you do, you come up with a different number that can be applied to a different measure of music, and you keep adding up these measures until finally you end up with a piece of music. And every piece of music you come up with is different. And therefore, everybody who shakes the dice, whether they're at a party or having fun, they can all make their own original Mozart-sounding composition. And so I have the part in which I play the Mozart musical dice game, and Terry has the part where she plays any Mozart piece she wants of her choosing for 40 minutes, one or more pieces that she may want.
You know, whenever you perform something, whether it's a production of Our Town or it is people spinning plates, you know, on the Ed Sullivan Show, or it's this, I think you hope that there is conversation that takes place among patrons after they leave. What would you hope some of that conversation is on the 30th after this has concluded?
Well, we're going to help them a little bit with their conversation because we're taking some of the music from inside and putting it onto the University of Arkansas Fort Smith bell tower. So when they come out, they're going to hear music they never heard before spraying out of the bell tower for about 20 minutes. So we'll keep agitating them. But it'll be an excuse to play music that I would never dare play on the bell tower. I happen to be the head Carolyn Orr here at the university. I've done that for the last 16 years. And we tend to play very traditional songs on that bell tower, but every now and then we get a little radical, and this is going to be one of those times on that Sunday afternoon on January 30th when people are going to hear that same music as they come out of the place. I suppose my main goal would be just to offer the experience to people of something different. I have no idea how people converse when they experience something completely different. Not only do I have performers performing music and doing martial arts and dance moves, but I also have three readers. They're going to be reading some important documents out loud and walking through the audience and asking the audience members to read their documents as well.
What else should we know about the performance on the 30th?
Well, the box office opens at 2:30. You can purchase tickets by calling the University of Arkansas Fort Smith box office, and the event lasts until 4:10.
4:10. And one last question. Would you rather have people hear this and have some idea of what might be happening, or people just going in with no expectation whatsoever?
That's a toss-up. I really don't know. I always feel that it's very helpful for people to know about historical music. If they're going to go to an opera, if they know ahead of time what the story is, et cetera. In a certain sense, you know, you're letting the cat out of the bag here by explaining things. But on the other hand, in order to avoid having anybody be frustrated, the last time we did this, we had faculty members sitting out in the lobby explaining the I Ching and tossing dice and trying to help people understand what is the Chinese I Ching numbering system, et cetera. This time, I'm simply going to explain it myself and make sure that everybody understands it.
I was just about to ask, how does the I Ching play into the music?
Well, you know, the I Ching is a very venerable old Chinese game where you take three coins of the same denomination, you know, and then you call one side of the coin yin and the other side yang. And you shake these three coins, coins about six times until you get six different readings. And those readings line up as lines, and either solid lines or broken lines. And you can come up with 64 different what are called hexagrams, pictures of lines. And they have, over the centuries, acquired special meaning, almost as like a fortune-telling game. So that if you shake dice and you come up with the number 50, for example, in a hexagram, it'll be the cauldron, which means abundance or something like that. Now, Cage said, I don't like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. I need more notes than that in the octave. So he decided to divide the octave into 64 parts to match the I Ching. And he let the computer shake the dice, so to speak, and decide which one of these microtonal intervals would be heard at any particular point in the concert. So those numbers, 1 to 64, they're the ones in the original performance that decided what slide would be seen, what note would be heard, how long it would be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it sounds fascinating. It sounds like it's going to be like nothing else most of us have ever experienced.
It sounds like you need to be there to experience it.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Glad to speak to you.